The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then Jesus sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. The Gospel of the Lord.
It's fun to be up in the bird's eye seat. Is to watch is when our lector this morning, at least, she was caught up with the angels. You were singing so well during the responsorial. But the one that you really have to appreciate that was sleeping with the angels is our deacon alongside of me. I'm not sure if you enjoy baseball. However, I enjoy being at a baseball game, but I do not enjoy baseball that well if I'm sitting watching it on television. It becomes, after a while, very tiring for me. But one of the great places is to be able to see a baseball game. And along with my favorite team is in New York, with the Yankees. And the Yankees are infamous, as you know. And the Toronto Blue Jays, at the same time, find that out periodically. At least for several times is when it was a real challenge here back and forth between the games. But recently when they had a series down in New York, the thing between the Blue Jays and the Yankees, the thing is there was a special event that was over in one of the sidebar columns of the newspaper that told of something that was very interesting that took place. And that was basically is that as they were approaching towards the series, it just happened that there were two boys in Central Park at the same time playing baseball along with several of their friends. And as they were playing, they were being watched by all kinds of people. And unfortunately, a rabid dog, the thing is, managed to, with all of its viciousness, to come right into the center and to begin to attack one of the players who happened to be the best friend of the young boy that was pitching. And without thinking of it in a hurry, what he did is he saw some rope and the like, and he grabbed it and somehow is at the same time put a chokehold with that rope onto the dog and then tied the dog firmly to a tree waiting for help. There was a reporter not too far away that caught sight of what it is that had taken place. And by the time that he arrived there, he, like most reporters, was ready for a story. So what he did is he started saying to the young boy, "I'm going to write something about you in tomorrow's paper." And so he began as a young Yankee fan rescues his best friend from a vicious dog. The boy looked up at him and he said, "But I'm not a Yankee fan." He said, "Okay." So then he started to write a new title and he says, "Okay, a visiting fan from Toronto who happens to like the Blue Jays, saves his friend." He looked back and he said, "But sir," he said, "I'm not a Blue Jays fan either." The reporter looked and he said, "Hey, kid, He said, "So what team do you root for?" He said, "I'm a Red Sox fan." And then he turned and he said, "A ruthless child almost chokes to death a favorite family pet." In all events of life, in everything that we read in the newspaper, in everything that we hear about us, and when we approach the scriptures themselves, how we listen and pay attention to what is presented to us depends on the mindset that we bring into the moment, how it is that we understand ourselves, and how we understand ourselves in relationship to others. Within that context, that begins to color how it is that you will listen to news, how you will contemplate events that happen within your own life, or at the same time, even your attentiveness to who God is within the context of your life. Today, for instance, as you listen to the readings, which are rich in symbolism, that tell us at the same time of that very special moment when about halfway through their formation period, Jesus with his disciples, with those who are come to him that are attempting to learn more about him, and those that he is trying to teach about himself, are suddenly encountered with another reality. And in the background for that reality is the area of Caesarea Philippi. Now, that reading should be at the same time fresh within our minds, because we just heard it on the 29th of January when we celebrated the Feast of the Great Apostles of Peter and of Paul as the foundational apostles of our church. We used that same gospel passage this past year from Matthew. But within it, it contains at the same time a challenge. Regardless if you just use it in January or if you use it now in August, it always has an everyday challenge to us all if we pay attention to it. That backdrop of Caesarea Philippi is very significant. As I've told you before, Caesarea Philippi was considered a religious kind of area. It's where it is that you went to celebrate the various religions of the people, whether they came from the Canaanite and the Phoenician tradition, or whether or not they were from the Roman tradition, or at the same time, even from the Greeks. For it is that background area where at the same time there were all kinds of temples risen to the various gods and goddesses of the people. And right at the top of them, Philip the Tetrarch had erected a very, very special temple on Mount Hermon. The thing is where he had placed the temple that overlooks the valley and overlooks all of these other temples. And in that temple was at the same time the head, a carved white marble head of Caesar, a way of saying that Caesar is the lead of the gods among us, overseeing everything else. If you just sat with that image for a while, it should be able to tell you oodles about life today and about the challenges of what it is that we face in the ordinariness of who it is that we are. But in that backdrop, Jesus looks at his disciples and he says, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" In other words, who do they say that I am? Well, Matthew doesn't record all of what they probably said. Some of them probably said, "Well, some people think you're a madman. Others see you as a lawbreaker. Others see you as a blasphemer of the scriptures and a blasphemer of our traditions." And yeah, there are a few that think you're John the Baptist raised up again within our midst. Some of them even think that you are the promise of Elijah that we had hoped for. Others see you maybe as Elisha or one of the other prophets. Some of them think you're great. And some of them still don't know what it is to think about you. That's an honest response. But then he looks at them and he says, "But who do you say that I am?" Who do you say? Put those other visions apart from me for a moment. And who do you say that I am? And they probably mumbled and they grumbled. And probably a few of them in their own minds said, well, right now I think you're a kook. Anything? And right now is at the same time I'm trying to figure out how in the world I got caught up in this mess to begin with. Others of you are saying is at the same time, I thought you were at the same time my golden coattail. The one that I could hook onto and I was going to get someplace. And some others is that, you know, well, you're a cousin, you're a relative, and every family has one of those. You know? But it's Peter in the midst of that, that suddenly at the same time makes a profound profession of something he doesn't even totally understand yet. But he says, you are the Christ. The word Christus comes from the Greek. But the word that in Hebrew, it would have said the Messiah, the anointed of God. And when Jesus looks back at him, he looks and he says, you are blessed indeed. For no more mere human being has given you that information, has given you that insight. Somehow you have been graced by God in your own life. And what you tell me is not only important for you, but it's also important for me. Because we're not sure about where he was in his own understanding at this point, because he's growing constantly within it of who it is that God intends him to be for his people. But when Peter calls him the Messiah, the Christ, is he thinking of it as you and I might look at it in hindsight? Or is he thinking of it in terms of what his people had wished for and had hoped for? That he would be a king that would set them free, that he would be a royal ruler, that somehow would bring them the greatest aspirations of everything that he had hoped for in the physical world about them? Or is he something more? Where is he? And what does he mean? And what does his significance as a Christ really mean to us? What does it mean to be the Son of the living God? Not of the deadness of the statues that are about you. Not of the deadness of the cultures that oftentimes surround our lives. Not the deadness that leads to a grave of ashes. But the Son of a living God. Of the one who brought all into existence. The one who brought you and brought me into existence. To be that one. When Jesus tells Peter not to tell anyone else that he is the Christ, it's because most people have that screwed up understanding of who he is. And he knows is that they need yet to continue to open their minds and their hearts to a learning, to come to a deeper and more profound understanding of who he is before they are ready to give themselves wholly and entirely to him. You and I are on that same kind of journey of life constantly. By the events that unfold in front of us, by the things that we go through, whether they be great moments of joy or at the same time moments of desperation, of pain, or of suffering, all of them bring us to a point where you have to ask the question, who do you say that he is? And what does it mean in your life? How does it challenge you? Not just from the outside, but from the inside. How does it change you? And how at the same time does it take you to a place that on your own you possibly never would have wanted to go to, and yet in it to find a grace-filled moment? A couple weeks ago, when I shared with you is that I would be leaving this parish community after 3 years of service here on September 1st, on that same weekend that I shared with you that news, I also needed to be able to share the same news with the members of my immediate family. Now, coming from a large family, any of you that have sisters, you automatically know that sisters rule the roost of a family life, especially when there are a number of boys within the family. If you want to meet the connecting point within family units, it is oftentimes a sister rather than a brother that becomes that melting point that draws people together. And when I called my sister and I shared with her, is because I figure if I tell my sister, I tell the world. You know, she's one of those, is that at the same time, if I tell her to keep it secret, she'll keep it secret. But if I tell her I want her to be able to get a message out there, trust me, within 15 minutes after I was off that phone, at the same time, everybody else in the immediate family knew where I was going and when it is I was going to get there. But the first thing is that she said to me, she said, "You're going where again?" And I said, "To North Carolina." And she said, "You're further away than you are right now in Toronto." She said, "So it's nothing closer for us." She said, "The only difference is it's on the way to Florida." But then as we went on in the conversation, she said something very strong to me, something that I've thought about every single day since then. She said to me, she said simply, "Is Paul, did you ever think you would get to this point in your life and someone else would still be telling you what to do?" Because that's not her experience. It's not my brother-in-law's experience. It's not any of my brothers nor my sister-in-law's or any of my nieces and nephews. It's not their experience. And I said, "You know, it's a great question." I said, "In my 20s, yeah, it made sense. In my 30s, that vow of obedience really made sense to me too. And even in my 40s, and then as I progressed onward, at various moments it makes sense, and at other moments it doesn't. Because it's not easy to have somebody else tell you what you are going to do and when it is that you are going to do it. But yet, that is the life that I vowed myself to many years ago. The same as many of you vowed yourself into a commitment to another human being, not knowing what the future would bring. And you don't walk away from the vow simply because the road got difficult or it got challenging. You don't walk away from that and at the same time just make it as though, well, it was good as long as it lasted. When something is asked of you, you at the same time have to come back and say to yourself, who is it that you say that Christ is? And for me, in all honesty, he is the person that I literally fell in love with many years ago. Literally enough to be willing to commit my life in a service in a way that I did not know how it would unfold or what it would bring. And that road has never, never always been easy. It's always been challenging. It's brought me great moments of joy and great moments of sorrow. It has brought me at the same time into all kinds of lives and the possibilities of sharing at the same time a message with so many other people in so many different ways. But it takes faith to accept that challenge. It takes hope to be able to live in the midst of it. To say is that, yes, things can be difficult. And this moment can be a great challenge. And yet, in it, understand that there is something of the grace of God that is unfolding. That's not just a lesson for me. It is a lesson for you. That in the moments of life where you have to at the same time face the challenge, is to ask yourself once again, who do you say that he is? And in the midst of what it is that unfolds, trust that he walks with you, calling you to something more than the moment that you are experiencing here and now, to what it is that might yet unfold. No one else can ever answer that question for you. Not if you went on Amazon.com and looked up Christology and saw over 1,000 books and ideas of who Christ is. The one that really counts is the one that you hold in your heart. the one that you bring in prayer, the place where you meet God.